Your On The Mark podcast is loading now. The On The Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On The Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On The Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK live telephone talk show, On The Mark. I am Mark Lawrence, host of the show. Joe McGranahan is here, the co-host. We're going to open up our toll-free line and our email in-basket at 9 a.m. That's when we'll take texts and outside communication. In the meantime, we're going to devote our show to our guests here today. We have all three of the candidates here in the 85th District State House races here. David Rowe is here. He is the GOP nominee in the race. I'm going to say that he has launched what is being talked about as a legendary door-to-door campaign. Is that a safe assumption? Can I say that?
I think that's definitely fair to say.
10,000 doors? Is that too many?
That's definitely too many.
Okay,
but
certainly
in the multiples of thousands.
Certainly in the thousands. The Democratic nominee is here, Dr. Jennifer Rager Kay, who the U.S. Postal Service is all smiling. Not all of their deficit is gone, but quite a bit of it, I think. Am I right there?
I hope we helped.
Okay.
I hope.
And she's done a ton of information via mail. You also have the most number of supporters who are willing to sit down and do stamping of cards
Absolutely.
And letters. And Claire Moyer is here. Last time I saw him was hiding behind the cross, and he is with us today. He was at Mass at Sacred Heart Church yesterday in Lewisburg. He is a write-in candidate, is a Republican, but he's got his name in circulation as a write-in candidate. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I do appreciate that. Very active in the... What was that you were doing? St. Michael's Guard?
St. Michael's Guard. It's the older folks get a chance to serve the altar with the priest. It's very formal, very ritual. It's something that we started up at church just a little bit over a year ago, and it's growing in popularity.
All right, well, I got to stop you there so that we don't cut into any of our time, but suffice to say, it's a great way that you have opted to serve. Since you are leaned into the mic, we are going to start with you as we go through our program today with a one-minute opening comment. We have all three of the candidates here in the 85th District, so they'll make a one-minute opening statement. Then each will get 2 minutes to answer questions. We'll open up the phones and emails for just questions, no commentary until 9:15, but if you have a question for our guests, we'll take that after 9 a.m. Rob Center is our producer, and so let's launch into this. We'll start to my immediate left with Claire Moore. Good morning, sir. 1 minute.
Good morning. And good morning, all to the listeners. Glad you're joining us here this morning. My name is Claire Moyer, and I am running as a write-in candidate in the special election for the 85th District because I believe in being honest in the process that transpired in this special election has the appearance of corruption and nepotism. During the conference, I wasn't even allowed to address the conferees to present my platform. If they had shown me some respect, I would not be here today. It is my contention that such a process does not offer the public the ability to vote for a candidate of their choosing. The only thing that people will be able to do is ratify the candidate chosen by this select group. I want to enable the public to have a choice between candidates, not parties. I'm a candidate that is honest and will not accept payment for favors surrounding any legislative issue. I believe in having an open-door policy so that constituents can come to me with their concerns and issues, and I will accept any solution that will offer that we can use as a starting foundation to solve problems.
All right, I'm going to stop you there. That is a full minute, so that explains how you got into the race. Dr. Jennifer Rager Kay, Democratic candidate, please.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Rager Kay. I am the Democratic candidate for state representative. I'm running primarily because I am tired of typical partisan politics, and I think we should put people first, which is my slogan. I think it's important to understand the issues that are laid before us and who is going to best represent those interests. If you want to select somebody who considers themselves full-time but not willing to represent the interests of the district, that's pretty useless. I'd much rather have somebody who has another profession, like myself, to keep their eye on the prize, and a representative who's willing to listen to the people and make fair-minded decisions, not simply vote down the party line. I think I've proven that to the constituents of this district, that I am perfectly capable to manage having a side profession that I can practice and also being able to represent the people of the district. I certainly think that that's something that's very important to me, and I've proven by being able to be present whenever necessary.
All right, there you go. You must have timed that out. It's perfect. Thank you so much. Please, David Rowe, Republican candidate whose name is on the ballot tomorrow.
Well, good morning, Mark and Joe. I'm running because the people of the 85th District deserve to have a representative who shares their values and who will fight for them in Harrisburg. I'm a proven conservative who believes in low taxes, smaller government, and pro-growth policies that will create family-sustaining jobs. Importantly, I will be a full-time legislator. I've been endorsed by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, the Pennsylvania Realtors Association, the Pro-Second Amendment Firearm Owners Against Crime, and the Chamber of Commerce. I have the support of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents throughout the district. I am particularly honored to have the full support of all Republican officials and office holders in Union and Snyder counties, the Pennsylvania Republican Party, the Federation of Republican Women, Senator Pat Toomey, and Congressman Fred Keller. I am committed to representing the interests of the people in the 85th District, and I look forward to our discussion here today.
All right, stay leaned into the mic. We have two-minute question opportunity or answer opportunities. Joe?
Well, I'll start with Dr. Rager Kay. After your loss to Representative Keller in the last election, you were quoted as saying, people in our area are misguided into what's best for them. It's not their fault. It's our fault as leaders to not be able to educate them on what is really in their best interest. That indicates that you think maybe your job as a legislator would be to be as a leader rather than a representative, as someone who needs to guide. So my question to all of you is, what would you be? Would you be a leader or a representative? And what do you see as the difference between the two?
I don't think there is much difference between being a leader and a representative. When you represent the people, we're a commonwealth in Pennsylvania, so the decision-making process comes down to the level of the people. You know, it's supposed to be for the people, by the people, and I think that's important. My issue with making that statement last time, to clarify, there's a difference between misguided and miseducated. And it's something that, you know, is important enough for me to make plain, primarily because misguided is at the fault of the leaders. It has nothing to do with the constituents themselves. You believe a person in a position of power, you should be able to trust them as well. And I don't think that's been the case in this area. I certainly think that as a representative, not only am I going to represent the best interests of all people through all parties, regardless, just like I do as a physician. I take care of people no matter what their race, religion, sexual orientation, as a physician, and I'll do the same in Harrisburg.
Okay, David.
I agree that there is a very small difference between being a representative and a leader, but I believe that I am most suited to be both in this instance. A leader should represent the values and opinions of the people of the district, of the people that elected them to be in that position of leadership. As a community leader who has served his community, be it on the board of the directors for the fire department, the commission for the police department, the campaign council for the Evangelical Community Hospital, I have been able to lead by example in investing in my community here. Additionally, I've served as a supervisor for East Buffalo Township. I have demonstrated a proven conservative record of lower taxes, holding the line against increased spending, and that is exactly what the people of the district want to see, and that's why I can represent them well as a leader, representing those values full time. Additionally, I've supported a number of pro-life organizations, including Save the Storks, the Expectations Women's Center, and I know that the life issue is one that is critical to a lot of people in this district who value the intrinsic value of life at all stages and believe it should be protected. And so, therefore, I can be a leader by being a representative, by representing their values in Harrisburg.
Okay. Claire?
Well, again, I don't see it as a lot of difference between the representative and the leadership ability. The representative is the one who opens their doors to the constituents that they can come in and express their concerns and share with the representative their possible solutions to an issue or a problem, then a leadership ability comes in where the representative can take those issues to the floor and get these issues taken care of by having other members of the legislature vote and discuss the issues.
All right. I'll start out with David with the next question. You have a liberal Democrat, quote and unquote, to your immediate right. You have an elderly war veteran who's propped up by the Democrats across from you, ads for you call our governor an extreme socialist. Yet you say you'll go to Harrisburg and help glue all of the working parts together in nonpartisan harmony. How will you do that if you use these kind of adjectives for people who don't agree with you?
Well, I don't think I ever said that I would be gluing things together in bipartisan harmony. I think there are very clearly a distinction between the policies being supported by myself and policies being supported by my opponent and Governor Wolf. There are policies that damage and stifle economic growth across the Commonwealth, and these are the policies being supported by the Democratic Party. Job-killing regulations, the third highest corporate net income tax rate in the nation, combining that with a number of taxes that trickle down, if it's property taxes, if it's the severance tax, if it's the realty transfer tax, and we have this burdensome climate that is making it impossible to grow and do business in Pennsylvania. So the question is, who do the people want to represent them? Somebody who's going to represent policies that will promote jobs and lasting economic growth, or somebody who will adhere to Governor Wolf's anti-business agenda in Harrisburg? So I will go to Harrisburg, and I will represent the interests of the business owners, the employers, the employees, the people across the district that make Pennsylvania great. So there is a very clear distinction in policy, and I do not pretend to say I will go to Harrisburg and support anything that is damaging to the business community that Governor Wolf supports.
Claire, trying to achieve some harmony in Harrisburg so progress can be made.
Well, I said at the last debate that when it comes to dealing with the one side or the other, each has their ideas. Each one has a small idea, another one has a small idea. If we bring them together, we end up with one big idea. I would not necessarily bend to anything that I feel is wrong or unjust. We have to work together. We got to take down the divide that is between the two parties. And until we start coming together, these things are not going to be solved. One person is not 100% right over the other person.
I, however, am trying to go and create some type of melody when it comes to bipartisan policies. That's something that I've said from the beginning. That's one of the biggest reasons why I'm running. I think one thing is that I've heard from a lot of constituents in this area is that they're tired of the typical partisan politics polarization. They're tired of lawmakers worrying about which side of the aisle they're sitting on rather than working together and doing their job. Excuse me. I think that, you know, if you have somebody that's going to go there to just represent one party, it's same old, same old. There's not going to be any change when it comes to being able to take the values from all parties, all people, work together to come up with the best solution for the district. It has nothing to do with whether you're going to just vote straight down on a party line.
All right. Thank you so much, Joe. For Claire, please.
Okay. Well, the governor's talked a lot over the weekend about things that he plans to do through some form of executive order or unilateral action on his part to try and solve or do something positive with respect to gun issues and mass shootings. Are you familiar with what the governor has proposed? And if so, do you agree with it or how would you change it?
Well, I've listened to some of the things that are being discussed about that, and I've read some of the articles and comments that have been issued on his discussions on gun control. As I said at the last debate, there are plenty of laws on the books as it is now. Now, I'm pro-Second Amendment, and I don't think I can get more clear on that than to support the Second Amendment. To far short from taking away all the guns from everybody, we're not going to stop the killings that are going on. So I would support anything that would help to perhaps suppress this, but if you go by the Ten Commandments, the Sixth Commandment clearly says, thou shalt not kill, and I don't think you can make it any simpler or plainer than that.
to Dr. Rager.
Certainly. I think that the issue that we're talking about are the red flag laws that Governor Wolf has proposed that has been supported bipartisan, I should add. One of the things that I have mentioned before, you know, and it's I'm not the stereotypical Democrat that wants to come grab your guns, primarily because I don't want anybody grabbing mine. I exercise my concealed carry permit on a daily basis, and I don't think that that should be violated. However, I think when it comes to safe gun ownership is the key. Two of the issues that I would support is the issue of outlawing the sale of long barrel shotguns without having a background check. You can go to a flea market today, purchase a gun, that person has no responsibility of selling that to you, and you have no responsibility to tell them what you're going to use that for. The other is the issue of binary triggers. Binary triggers is something that's come up several times. They're legal in the state of Pennsylvania, and that's something that I think that is just not necessary for the form of owning a gun, whether it be for protection or for enjoyment.
Okay, David, the governor's proposals, for him or against him, how would you change them?
Well, the governor has a history of bypassing the legislature with his executive authority and overstepping his bounds, so this is just another step in that same direction. The Second Amendment is there in place to give citizens the opportunity to protect themselves against a foe, and particularly a tyrannical government that could perhaps come and infringe upon their constitutional rights. Whenever we discuss restricting gun ownership, such as Jen has talked about, or saying that nobody needs to own an assault rifle, like Claire has said, all we're doing is tipping the balance of power against the citizens and in favor of what could be a tyrannical government or anybody else who would come and try to do harm or infringe upon our constitutional rights. Legal gun owners in Pennsylvania and across the nation are not the issue. They have never been. The statistics prove that legal gun owners are not the issue. The issues of background checks, Pennsylvania already has a two-tiered system in place. There's the federal background check, and then Pennsylvania has its own system of background checks. So there's already a two-tiered system in place. The number of attacks that happen usually, almost exclusively, happen with people who would have passed background checks anyway. So the issue at hand is not more regulation, is not more infringement upon the Second Amendment. What we need is we need to foster a culture of education about firearms. They are a part of our culture. If it's the Eddie Eagle program to bring firearm education to children, if it's better response time, there's a number of things that are at hand that can be handled. But the governor's executive order to try to infringe upon our Second Amendments is not the solution.
All right. Is it time for me to ask a question of Dr. Jennifer Rager-Kay?
Yes, it is. And there will be two responses to that question.
No, come on. No. All right. Sorry about that, folks. Running this clock, Chris Elio offered to run the clock today, and I said, no, I can handle it. But all right. Minimum wage. We'll start with Dr. Jennifer Rager-Kay. The minimum wage, should it go up in Pennsylvania? And if so, how much? Why, if it should go up, how much? And if it should stay the same, why? Dr. Kay.
I absolutely support increasing minimum wage when it's done in an incremental manner and having legislation in place to protect small business owners. I certainly think that other states in the surrounding area, out of every state in our surrounding area, Pennsylvania is the only state that has not raised minimum wage. And I certainly think that when it comes to looking at the constituents in this area, you know, it's been said that minimum wage, you know, there aren't a lot of Pennsylvanians that make minimum wage, that they're mainly high school students. But when you look at the statistics, minimum wage actually is going to affect more than just high school students, when the fact that people over 26 are the bracket that makes minimum wage. When you look at this opportunity for the area to grow, it's a win-win situation. When you look at who's going to be spending the money to buy goods in the area, let alone across the country, it's the middle class. It's those that make minimum wage. They're the ones that actually drive economic development. If you put money into the hands of those that spend, then you're going to have that win-win situation. However, there needs to be safeguards in place to protect small businesses. One of the proposals that I'll take to Harrisburg is being able to lower the responsibility of the employer to pay towards workers' compensation specific requirements that small business owners have to pay towards. By lowering some of those percentage requirements, that will make up for the difference so they're not impacted as hard.
David, the minimum wage.
We all want to see wages go up. We all want to make more money. But increasing the minimum wage from the top down has proven to be the wrong way to go time and time again. The University of Washington did research on Seattle's $15 minimum wage hike, and it actually showed negative results, a loss of about $125 per month for the average low-wage worker. When we increase minimum wage from the top down, we are going to lose jobs, prices are going to skyrocket, and businesses are going to close. As an employer, as a business owner that actually has hands-on experience with hiring employees, managing payroll, I can speak firsthand that the minimum wage increase will be devastating to small businesses, employers, and employees who will most likely end up losing their job. I've talked to a number of employers across the district, and they completely agree with me unanimously that if the minimum wage is jumped to $15, they will have to lay off staff, they will be cutting hours, and everyone will make less money across the board.
All right, and Claire, minimum wage.
Well, if we never in our history ever had a minimum wage increase, we wouldn't be where we are today with the salaries that people are being paid. I support increasing the minimum wage, but I want it done incrementally. I don't think that any business or the economy could sustain jumping from where we are today to a $15 or $20 an hour minimum wage increase. But done incrementally, perhaps over 3-4 years, I think we could certainly sustain that, and the economy would adjust to that.
All right, Joe, a question starts out with David.
David. Yes. Let's talk for a minute about taxation and the benefits or lack thereof. Start with Governor Corbett, who with our state representatives and senators passed a repeal or let float the excise tax, oil excise, franchise tax, which made it possible for PennDOT to have enough money to build the Central Susquehanna Valley Thruway Project and projects across the state. But undeniably, Pennsylvanians are paying a slightly higher price for that. If it had been your vote at the time, would you have voted to support what our local representatives and senators did? And do you think it's a good value?
We need to stop pretending like Pennsylvania has a revenue problem. Pennsylvania has brought in record revenues year after year. The issue is not with revenue. The issue is with spending. When we look at projects like transportation issues and infrastructure investments, there is a way to approach those large projects without needing to impose upon the residents higher and higher taxes every time. As a supervisor for East Buffalo Township, where we have multiple bridges, each one of those bridges, as any municipal, county, or state official will tell you, will cost hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to update, repair, fix. But in East Buffalo Township, we have been able to budget appropriately. We have been able to create a long-term budget forecast that allows us to save the money needed to earmark those funds so that when we have those larger projects coming due, we have the funds available and we don't need to raise taxes. You look at Penn Township, where they just got $500,000 in a matching grant because they managed to save their money over the years to be able to have that matching monies. They saved the money themselves. They weren't required to raise taxes to do it. So when we look at these larger projects, we need to stop thinking that the only way to get the money for them is to raise taxes. With a long-term perspective, with a fiscally conservative approach, these large projects can be completed and can be accomplished without needing to go back to the taxpayers for more and more money.
Claire, was it a good deal to raise the tax or raise that tax a little bit on gasoline and look at what we got in return, or a bad deal?
Well, Pennsylvania is one of the states that has the highest taxes on gasoline. When you go to the gas pump, a very big portion of that amount you're paying for your gas goes to taxation. I don't believe in raising taxes any more than you absolutely have to. I think that we have to control spending, and the way that we do that is we go through the budget line by line and get away with those line items that we really don't need. And if we can take those monies and allocate them in better areas, then we don't have to raise taxes. There's no reason to raise taxes. So basically, let's control our spending and get rid of the frivolous nonsense.
Okay, so it sounds like we have two no votes so far on the funding for the Susquehanna Valley Thruway Project. Dr. Rager, you're the not a tiebreaker, but you're the third vote.
I certainly support building and having funding for the Susquehanna Valley Freeway. However, I don't necessarily support doing so by raising taxes on anything necessary. I'm not exactly sure if I would have supported that as well, primarily because I think that there are other ways to increase sources of revenue in the state that we're not taking advantage of, rather than raising taxes on gasoline. And, you know, Mr. Rowe is correct. It's not a revenue issue. We have the opportunity to raise alternative sources of revenue. We're not taking advantage of that. It's also not a spending issue, because when you look at the last 4 years, you can look at trends in rising revenue versus rising spending. It's easy for someone to sit up here and say, yes, we're spending. It's a spending problem. We spend too much money. But when you look at it side by side with revenue, the actual spending rate, the percentage of the revenue that the state takes in, has decreased over the last 4 years. So certainly I don't think the answer is raising taxes when we have multiple sources of recurring revenue that we're not taking advantage of.
All right, stay near the microphone for our next question. We're going to ask about legalizing marijuana. Claire, for you, the listening tour is over in Pennsylvania for legalizing pot. What's your view on this? If we should legalize it, should we tax it? How should this be done if we do it? Claire.
Well, in some of the states that have legalized this, it certainly has become a source of tax revenue for them. I'm still out on legalizing any form of perhaps illegal substance to use for whether it's medical purposes or whatever. Maybe this goes back to my time when I was in the service and what things different occurred in the Vietnam era. If marijuana can do the things that they're claiming it to do, I would not necessarily object to that. But I'd like to see a little more time and research on it to see what the actual results are. I don't think we have enough results in place right now to say one way or the other.
Right. Dr. Rager Kay, the idea of legalizing pot in Pennsylvania.
I certainly think it's an issue that should not, be closed-minded. It's something that, as a physician, I know that the use of medical marijuana has been a substantial alternative therapy for treating especially patients with addiction. That's one thing that I think that we need to consider when we look at recreational marijuana. The issue with the state of Pennsylvania is that we do have a physician drug monitoring program. We do have those safeguards that have been implemented so that we can help to decrease the opioid epidemic. However, what we do not have in place is a solution for what's going to happen when all of those patients, in a sense, have their pain medications cut off. And I certainly think that it's not the easiest thing for a patient who's addicted to pain medication to go to a provider to say, I have a problem, and go through the legal routes to get medical marijuana. The issue that we need to remember is, in the states that have legalized recreational marijuana, it's extremely regulated, heavily regulated. It's not just something you can go to the Wise Markets and buy. It's something that we need to consider, aside from the fact that in states like Colorado that have legalized recreational marijuana, they had such an increase in taxation revenue for the state that all taxpayers received a refund check from the state. So there's many benefits that we need to consider. There's also issues that we need to safeguard against. But as a physician, I think that's something unique that I'll take to Harrisburg.
All right, David, please.
So first of all, I think anytime we address a policy and try to guess how much tax money we can get out of it, that's definitely the wrong driving force for any policy decision. Second of all, I do support the use of medical marijuana, but I am strongly opposed to the use of recreational marijuana. And I'm just going to cite a quote from the National Academy of Medicine that found in 17 that cannabis use is likely to increase the risk of developing schizophrenia and other psychoses. The higher the use, the greater the risk. I think it's unfortunate that we are discussing legalizing recreational marijuana at the same time we are facing such a challenging opioid epidemic. You know, Jen has disparaged the meaning of strong families, which is interesting because at the Lewisburg League event, she did state that strong families were a deterrent to addiction. And I believe that we need to have a more comprehensive approach to treating the opioid epidemic like an addiction, treating addiction like a disease. And I think one of the best ways that we can do that is funding the social programs necessary to enable warm handoffs, which is a scenario in the office where a doctor is able to on-site prescribe, connect a social worker with an at-risk patient so that they can immediately begin to make the progress they need to that day. The danger that we have now is is that a lot of times patients will be told, hey, you know what, we'll connect you with someone in the next couple of weeks. And a lot of times when those couple of weeks have come and gone, it's already too late for that patient. So further supporting the social working programs that allow those patients to make the first steps towards recovery is something that we absolutely must do.
Right. Everybody has stayed within the two-minute time frame. They're answering questions in these rounds of questions that they have 2 minutes of open opportunity to do so. We'll continue with that. We'll open up the phone lines. If somebody has a question for the candidates, call us 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. And you can email us at onthemark@wkok.com. Joe and I will select from email or call-in questions and put those to our guests in equal measure. You are listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. We've dispatched the CBS News this hour. We'll have local news coming up at 9:20. We still have a slowdown on the Veterans Memorial Bridge, about a 10-minute delay for motorists there. So that is one item that is in the news today. Joe.
We'll start with Dr. Rager in this round. Pennsylvania, over the past, six years, has had a Democratic governor and a Republican-controlled legislature, rather heavily Republican-controlled legislature. So that means that the budget spending bills that come out are necessarily a compromise. Do you believe, under this current administration and with the House and Senate in Republican hands, that our state money is being spent on the right priorities, yes or no? And if no, how would you change it?
I don't absolutely agree that the money is being spent 100% appropriately. I think that there are a lot of areas that we can curb, we can cut from in order to save money. One of the areas that I think is important is certainly something that has been brought up time and time again for myself, is the issue of whether we have this full or part-time legislature. The fact is we're the second highest paid state that has representatives and senators being paid over $80,000, which is substantial. You know, certainly there actually is a bill that's being brought out that was represented, that was brought by a Republican representative to decrease the state legislature back down to an appropriate number. And it's something that I think that is an opportunity for the governor and the House to be able to work together to find ways to save taxpayers money. And I certainly think, you know, part-time legislatures are more efficient and smaller, and what true Republican would be against smaller, more efficient government? And I think that that's one area that we can look at to save taxpayers a tremendous amount of money. There's also several areas of the bill that the budget that is I see as wasteful, and it's certainly something that I think that as a lawmaker I can certainly benefit the area by doing so.
Hey, David, is our state money being spent wisely, or how would you change it?
As a business owner, I can speak specifically to one line item in the budget, and that is, well, it's actually multiple line items, and that is the concept of corporate welfare, which is damaging to our business climate and which drives up our overall corporate net income tax. The budget for 2019 to 2020 includes $729 million in corporate welfare, $729 million, and those are handouts to the large corporations that can afford big-time lawyers who are able to take advantage and receive government handouts at the expense of the rest of us who are picking up the tab. If corporate welfare was able to be eliminated, the corporate net income tax rate could be reduced over 2 percentage points, from 9.99, the third highest in the nation, to 7.8, which would take us all the way down to 16th. And all that would do would create a level playing field so that the small business owners wouldn't have to be picking up the tab so that the big guys get to run away with the tax money.
Okay, Claire Moyer, is our money spent wisely at the state level? And if not, how would you change it?
Well, I think there's always improvements that can be made in your spending budget. I'm not in agreement to any particular increase in taxes or taking taxes from people. Property tax issue has always been one with me. I think we need to sit down and go through the budget on a line-by-line item and really take out the excess of meat that we really don't need, get the funds allocated in the direction that they need to be allocated.
Okay, very succinct answer. We have all four phone lines ringing at the moment, and we have two email questions. The email was first.
You see the highlighted question.
Right. He says, how does, it's specifically for Mr. Rao. What I hear Mr. Rao saying is that he's only interested in representing Republicans if he wins. I'm a Democrat. How does he plan to represent constituents who aren't Republicans? What will he do to represent our concerns?
Me first?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, the issues that I support are issues that will benefit the lives of all taxpayers in Pennsylvania, regardless of political affiliation. I support the policies that bring rising wages, that provides family-sustaining jobs, and those are the policies that I will support. And you can look at the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that President Trump passed, and over 90% of Americans got a tax cut, and that's going to include a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats. A rising tide lifts all ships, and these policies are going to be beneficial for Pennsylvanians across the board, regardless of whether they're Republicans or Democrats.
Okay. Dr. Rager, how do you plan to represent people who aren't of your political party?
I think I practice that every day in my profession as a physician. It's not something that all people can certainly say that they have the ability to do. I think that one thing you have to remember is that as a physician, I have the ability to represent people regardless of who they are. I took an oath to do that, and I'll certainly do that in Harrisburg. I think one thing we have to remember is that, you know, my opponent has said time and time again that he will ensure that the power stays in the hands of the Republican Party. That's certainly not something that's going to be representing everyone. The okay. issue of rising wages as well, and also the issue of the Trump tax cut. We need to remember that, yes, Pennsylvanians may have benefited. I'm one of those, but that's something that was not made on the state level.
Okay, and Claire, how would you represent people that aren't of your political persuasion?
Well, I think I've kind of shown it just in this campaign. There's been some things said about me with reaching out to a Democrat to help me with this campaign, and I had said from the onset that this gentleman is my friend, and he'll always be my friend. And I just don't feel it's right that someone would make any kind of derogatory comments about that. I have said that I would reach across the aisle, and I think I've proved my willingness to do that. As I said earlier, if you take a little bit of somebody's idea and a little bit of somebody else's idea, and you bring the two of those together, you have a great big idea here. And put that in motion and make things work and refine it as you go along.
All right, we're going to go to our telephone callers now. We'll start with Dr. Jennifer Rager Kay answering the question. Michelle is going to be the individual who will pose that question. Go right ahead, Michelle. The guests can hear you. The candidates can hear you.
Okay, my question is, do you agree that gerrymandering corrupts democracy and we should protect growing districts from partisan politics? Would you support passing HB 23, which includes an independent commission?
Absolutely. I am a strong proponent of passing that bill, primarily, again, because it's everything I represent as a candidate and potential representative. The fact that I think that, you know, this is not something, again, that should be in the hands of any political party, regardless of whether it's Democrat, Republicans, or a third-party system. This is something that just makes sense to the people. You can't have fair representation when you have one party that's in charge of determining where these lines are going to be drawn. If you look at our district alone, it's absolutely absurd the way that it's cut, and it's primarily done so that people who live in those certain cities are going to be eliminated from the ability to run for office in the next election, and I think that's absolutely unfair. It just goes further towards the corruption that we see in our state government.
Claire, the question was about gerrymandering.
Well, I don't agree with gerrymandering. I really don't see a need for it. People have the right to think for themselves and make a choice for themselves. So you don't need to have territories realigned so that it benefits one party one way or the other.
All right. David, please.
No. Yeah, I'm sorry. Now you got me confused.
Sorry about that. Well, interestingly, you know, the 2018 court decision that invalidated a federal district map had passed previously with overwhelmingly bipartisan support in the legislature. The Constitution of the Commonwealth clearly gives responsibility to the state legislature to draw the maps, and an independent commission of appointed bureaucrats should not determine district boundaries for Pennsylvania's state and federal districts. Independent commissions are unelectable and unaccountable to the citizens, and giving unfettered power with no oversight to a commission invites abuse and corruption. Commission members would be unknown, have no repercussions for bad behavior, and share no accountability while working under an illusion of neutral nonpartisanship. If we are searching for neutrality and fairness when creating districts, there are interesting options that remove partisan opinion from the process. There are certain technologies that allow us to set parameters and draw district lines at the touch of a button, all while complying with requirements of the Voting Rights Act and election law.
All right, we are going to have time for one more caller to ask a question, and we're going to start with Claire, and Billy's going to get that opportunity. I'm sorry, other callers, we see all the lines lit, but we'll only have time for one more caller on this topic. So, Billy, the question goes to Claire first, and the other guest will answer, and we'll only have 1 minute for the answer. So, Claire, listen to Billy, and he has a question.
Last year, Governor Wolf vetoed the Down Syndrome Protection Act. I'm wondering what your position is for abortion on demand, and specifically whether children who have been diagnosed with Down Syndrome while still in the womb should be allowed to be aborted purely because the parents don't want what they perceive as a burden of raising a Down Syndrome child.
All right, abortion on demand and this concept of aborting a child, Claire, because of Down syndrome. Start with Claire, 1 minute.
Well, I think the easiest way for me to answer that, and it would be very short, and that is that I'm pro-life.
Well, what about the Down syndrome case is the caveat in the questioner?
Well, there are always medical circumstances that could possibly warrant the abortion of a child. I would still feel that in many instances the child has the right to be born. I see people with children with Down syndrome, and I really admire them that they are taking care of this individual. And I've always asked myself, well, what happens once the parents are gone? Who's going to take care of this individual? So it is a concern, but I'd have to stand firm and strong on my pro-life movement or my pro-life position.
Right, David, the question is about abortion on demand and Down syndrome aborting that child.
Well, we all know somebody with Down syndrome, and if you know them, they are the most loving people that you can ever encounter. So I think it is sickening that Governor Wolf vetoed a bill that would have protected their right to live. I am the only candidate in this race who has a truly pro-life pedigree. I have been endorsed by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, which is the largest pro-life organization in the state. I work for the Pennsylvania Family Council on pro-life issues. Claire and Jen have both stated that they support and voted for Governor Wolf, so that is tantamount to his support for his veto of this life-saving bill. The Expectations Women's Center, Save the Storks, and a number of other pro-life institutions I have been proud to support over the years. When we look at the favors that Governor Wolf is handing out, you look at Planned Parenthood, which, despite getting $240 million in revenue, still received $22 million in taxpayer monies, $4 million of which they spent on lobbying, and another $2.5 million they spent propping up candidates, including Governor Wolf.
Let me stop you there, because you're almost to a full minute and you haven't done the Down syndrome question yet. So answer that, and that'll be that for
clarify
that question.
Clarify the question.
Would you, if you are pro-life and as an elected representative, and parents say, well, our child has Down syndrome, we'd like to abort them anyway, would you allow that?
Absolutely not. The life is intrinsically valuable from
birth.
I hate
to tell you that, but that's the answer. We will let you go first with closing comments, and they are 1 minute each. I didn't get Dr. Rager. Jeez, isn't that something? Please, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think just to clarify the issue that was brought up by my opponent about Planned Parenthood is 0% of those funds go towards providing abortions, first of all. The issue when it comes to the Down syndrome bill, there again, abortion is not a black and white issue, and we need to understand that. As a physician, that's something that I understand because I've seen that. It's certainly something, as far as the Down syndrome bill goes, that I wouldn't necessarily say absolutely yes, a parent has 100% any right to say, you know, I don't want this child. However, when it comes to look at the issues for abortion, that's something that needs to be made between that woman, her partner, and their medical provider. It's not something that the state government, let alone the federal government, should have anything to do with. You know, just like, you know, the Republicans want small government, less government interference, this is a perfect example of the same scenario.
All right. Thank you so much. Now we have closing statements of 1 minute each. David, you are first up.
Well, thank you, Mark and Joe. Thank you, Claire and Jen. Tomorrow's election is about whether our next representative supports the conservative values of Union and Snyder counties or the liberal big government high tax policies of Governor Wolf. I will oppose the liberal agenda of the Democrats and fight for policies that encourage economic growth, support our farming community, and provide family-sustaining jobs. As a township supervisor, I held the line against increasing the size of government. I never voted for tax increases or more business regulations. I will bring that same conservative principle to the state legislature. As a solid conservative, I am pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, and will defend our religious liberty. I will be a strong voice for our values in Harrisburg, and I humbly ask for your vote tomorrow.
Thank you so much for appearing on our program today. Dr. Jennifer Rager-Kay, a closing statement of 1 minute.
Having a state representative who considers himself full-time but not willing to represent the interests of the district is useless for this district. I would much rather have a representative who has a profession outside of the state house that enables them to focus on what they're truly doing there to represent the people, make fair-minded decisions, and not simply vote down the party line. I have proven that I am more than capable to balance a profession, to be able to run a full-time campaign, and also have the ability to be a representative. The question is, has my opponent? My opponent is unable to keep commitments because he's too busy running a full-time campaign. However, what's going to happen if he's elected? Full-time representative, full-time campaigning, full-time business owner. Will he bail on the people again? If you still can't break party loyalty, then vote for Claire Moyer. We have a phenomenal candidate who is a Republican that is running in this election. That is a wonderful alternative we have. However, I ask for your vote to be able to not claim to be something I'm not. I've been proven. I'm here. I'm able to handle the situation and take on the responsibilities of your representative.
That's a minute. All right. Thank you so much. Claire Moyer, you get an opportunity for a 1 minute additional remark.
Again, I'd like to thank WKOK and Mark and Don and Jen and David for being here this morning to give the people, your listeners, an opportunity to hear the different positions of each of the candidates. First of all, I want to thank the listeners also who tuned into this morning to hear the final debate where each candidate presented their position on key issues facing the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Throughout life, we encounter many trials and tribulations. How we face these challenges determine what kind of individual we are and what we will be. Because I believe in the democratic process, I entered this race so that you have a true option of choice. I believe in you, my friends, my neighbors, and fellow Pennsylvanians. I will represent you honestly and fairly. I will not accept bribes or payments of any form to sway a decision that would not be representative of the people. Legislative bills should stand alone.
5 seconds.
And only cover the issues on hand. I ask that you consider all issues and vote for me tomorrow in the special election as a write-in candidate.
All right. Thank you so much, yes. Candidates, for being on the show. Claire Moyer is the write-in candidate.
I think we should add that, you know, we appreciate the respectful way you've answered our questions and you've refrained from personal attacks, and you've, I think, shed a lot of light here today, and I think that's exactly what we were hoping for. You all deserve our thanks for participating
in this
forum.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us here.
Thank you very much.
And you tolerated me, too. So that says something. So
well, they now have an appreciation for what I deal with 4 days a week.
Every day, all right, as does everyone, no doubt there. Thank you so much. We heard Claire Moyer, the write-in candidate for State House in the 85th District. Dr. Jennifer Rager-Kay is here. She's a Democratic candidate. Her name is on tomorrow's ballot. And David Rowe is here, the GOP nominee. His name is on the ballot tomorrow. Do go to the polls tomorrow if you're in the 85th District, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then, as always, tune in to WKOK and WKOK.com. to hear your vote count. We are going to flip to open phones with news headlines and open phones after these messages on WDKOK's On the Mark program.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. I do need to check some news headlines, so let's do those here. Still no name out from the Northumberland County coroner on the individual who may have drowned yesterday in the Susquehanna River. The coroner's office still not disclosing who went into the Susquehanna River during a swimming outing and did not come back up. His friends called 911. He was at the old Sea Scout dock at that time near Northumberland. Again, no name being disclosed. It's almost back to school time for the Valley's children, and that means early to bed and early to rise for the kids. Dr. Allison Schuessler, a pediatrician at Geisinger, says the amount of sleep a kid needs varies. As for 5 to 10-year-olds,
we're looking more like 9 to 12 hours, not significantly less than your preschoolers. Preteen to teenagers should be getting anywhere from 8 to 10 hours of sleep, so still a little bit more than that 8 hours a night we classically think of for adults.
You can hear the entire interview about how much sleep kids need, vaccinations, and other back-to-school topics at WKOK.com. She is a Geisinger doc. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf on Friday directed state police and other agencies under his control to focus greater efforts on addressing gun violence 2 days after a gunman shot and wounded 6 Philadelphia police officers. The Democratic governor Friday announced a change that includes a new special counsel on gun violence, which will have 6 months to recommend how to reduce mass shootings, domestic violence, suicide, and accidental shootings. Governor Wolf is setting up a new Office of Gun Violence Prevention at the State Commission on Crime and Delinquency. He wants state police to expand and support gun buyback programs and increase monitoring of hate groups and white nationalists. Governor Tom Wolf does. And a man fat-shamed by President Trump at a recent rally in New Hampshire says he is still a supporter of the president and doesn't mind the comments. Frank Dawson had been attempting to stop protesters in the nosebleed seats of Thursday's President Trump rally. After the scuffle, the president singled out Dawson as having a serious weight problem. The president says, "This guy's got a serious weight problem. Go home. Start exercising. Get him out of here, please. He's got a bigger problem than I do. Got a bigger problem than all of us." Now he gets to go home and tell his mom what the hell he has just done. Dawson, undeterred, is still a strong President Trump supporter.
I grabbed the one sign, then another sign, and I took care of those and threw them away. I came back and retrieved the third sign from the other woman, took it and tossed it over the balcony rail, and then get the crowd all fired up.
After hearing about fat-shaming the wrong person, a supporter of the president, the White House says President Trump did not apologize but did contact the individual. He phoned the supporter and left him a message thanking him for support but did not use the word sorry or apologize for that incident.
How about the word fat?
He probably didn't use that in the message, but, well, the president would still say the guy's got a serious weight problem and needs to start exercising. All right, we are going to switch to open phones because of the nature of campaign laws, we cannot raise a new issue on this show. So if we talked about Second Amendment, I think we did. Dr. Jennifer Rager Kay raised that topic. Let's see.
Minimum wage,
funding,
taxes.
Yeah, whatever it is. Folks can elaborate on that. But as it relates to this race and these three candidates, since they are no longer here.
Or personal attacks are out of the question, too. Or revealing personal information about people would be off record.
Right,
since
we didn't discuss that. Raise any new issues. All right, so that's the ground rules that us in radio get to face as we head towards the special election tomorrow. Lewis has been very patient. Thank you, sir. Thanks for calling in. You're on the mark.
Hi, Mark. How are you today?
I'm sorry, I didn't... What did he say?
I don't know.
Oh, please. Yep, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, hi. I'm Lewis. David Rowe raised a question. You know, he's pro-life, pro-family, values. I guess my question is, you know, what pro-family values is he for? You know, is it all inclusive of LGBTQ families?
But he did talk about family values, certainly pro-life. He mentioned that the Down syndrome exception is not something that he would allow, that that baby would have to be brought to term, and aborting a child because of Down syndrome, it would not be something he would favor. That so thank you, Lewis. Thanks for the call. Jordy, you are next up. Thank you so much for listening to our show today. You're on the mark.
Hi, yeah, thank you. Listen, I wanted to clear up some real misinformation that, that David Rowe...
Turn your radio down. And then go ahead.
Yeah, I did. Okay, yeah, it's is that better?
Yep, perfect. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, he, you know, David is a business owner, and we all applaud that. And he clearly did his, you know, homework. He sounded very polished, but he really doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to the impact of raising the minimum wage. It's a big complicated issue. The economy is a big complicated thing, and it's easy to say nice little stories like it will kill jobs or whatever. That's not what the research shows. The most recent research, which looks at 100 minimum wage increases in cities and states between 1979 and 2016, this is a paper that came out in January of this year, including one of the authors of the University of Washington study. He cited about Seattle. They say quite unequivocally that when you raise the minimum wage over 5 years, it increases wages for the lower end of the workers. It does not have a net negative impact on unemployment. So when it comes in, there may be some shifts in employment. Employers may not hire as immediately because they're paying their workers more. But the overall economic impacts are really strong. And the bottom line is this, and I would love for you all to comment on this, is, you know, have not indexed minimum wage to the way the economy grows. And the effect of that is we can say the minimum wage in the 1930s was whatever it was, a dollar. And then and when Franklin Roosevelt passed it, he meant for it to be a living wage, a supportable wage. That's clear in the historical record. And then we did a thing as a, in politics where we said we're not going to let that grow. And that has the impact of when the economy grows, you know, businesses and the wealthy get more of the economic pie and workers get less. And if we had indexed the minimum wage starting in the 60s or 70s, it would be anywhere between $15 and $22 an hour. And so we all do better when we all do better. And when we have wage laws that deliberately keep working people poorer, it makes us all worse off. And that is why we have increasing inequality. And David Rowe has no answers for that.
All right. Well, minimum wage, Joe, do you favor that? The question's been put to us.
Minimum wage? Well, I think there's a good argument to be made that somewhere along the line it needs to go up. I don't know how much, but I certainly don't think $15 all in one fell swoop is the answer. And I agree with people
who say... Well, that's not the policy. That's never the policy. That's talking points. The real plan, Jen's plan, other plans
you don't have any
are
talking
incremental
points.
Over time.
You're giving talking points too, my friend.
I'm giving research, you know, the difference between
the
talking
research.
Points is research is, well, I can look it up and give you facts. Some candidates, like David Rowe, just spout off whatever sounds nice, and they put this myth out that fits a theory in their head that minimum wage increases are going to hurt the economy, and that is not true when you look at research. That's not an opinion, that is the economic.
Everybody shows that it's at least upwards to maybe 3 million jobs that are lost, mostly young people who work at low-wage jobs, and it gives them a chance
6%.
To get into the workplace.
6% of the people in America who earn minimum wage are between 16 and 19 years old. That 3 million jobs is based on a model that estimates what it is. When you look at what has actually happened, when you increase the minimum wage in cities and states, and it's happened in Seattle and Washington, there are 18 states that have raised their state minimum wage since 2018. The effective national minimum wage now, if you take the average of all of those, is more like $9. When you look at real data and what happens in the real world, the minimum wage can sometimes have a short-term negative impact on some employment in some sectors, but overall, over 3 or 4 or 5 years, which is what we should look at, it increases wages, it increases job growth, and it makes our economy work for the people instead of having the economy work only for the benefit of those who are the richest.
All right. Thank you so much.
That is the economic reality of our time now. And if you can disagree with some of the smaller
points
about it.
We have to stop you there, Jordy. We're out of time. But thank you so much. Well said, and you're absolutely right on all points, and Joe is wrong on nearly all of them. So
you say.
I know that to be true. All right. We got more callers waiting. We are getting close to a break, but Buzz is next in line. Thank you so much for calling in, sir. You're on the mark.
Hi, guys. I just caught the end of show you had earlier talking to candidates, and as I was hearing Mr. Rao or Roe speak, I just heard something that I hear from so many the candidates, and that's, you know, party over people. And then I heard Dr. Rager say that she wants to represent all the people. Well, I know you can't do that, but you do have to go with the attitude of listening to other people and going voting for whatever you feel is best for your people, not best for your party. That's something we hear all the time, every day, from everybody. It's just, you know, we've gotten away from representation of the people. It seems like it's all representation of the party anymore, except Dr. Rager. I have no horse in that race. I can't vote. I would choose her. That's just a comment I wanted to make. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
I think that the question I asked at the very first for Dr. Rager, using the comment that she made after the last election, do you see yourself as a leader or as a representative? And I think they all said that they didn't see very much difference between the two, but I do see a difference there. To me, a leader is someone who wants to convince you that what they believe is the right course of action is the course of action they should take. A representative is someone who says, okay, I may not agree with what the majority of the people in my district feel, but that's their opinion and I must represent them. So I guess what I was hoping for was an answer as if something you had to do as a state representative came up against your own personal held beliefs, would you come down on the side of the majority of the people in your district or on the side of what you believe is right for the district?
Well, and we've seen this time and time again with our state representatives around here, where sometimes they vote with the party, other times they vote against the party. You know, going into the 85th district, you have candidates there and representatives who always had a mind of their own and voted no on many things, right. even though their Republican colleagues, one of them too,
Fred and Russ, both had
right. If you
long
can go
records.
All the way back that far, and that, well, even before then, the individual who was in that seat, his name escapes me, but he had a mind of his own.
Are you talking about the Union County Commissioner?
No, not John Showers. Before him. Okay.
That was Reno Thomas.
Yes, there we go. Thank you very much. I never thought of John Showers as being remarkably independent, just Democrat through and through. But that's just me. All right.
I always thought of Reno as being Republican through and through. Maybe I'm wrong.
You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com at our show sponsor by the Sunbury Motor Company.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Please check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our toll-free line is open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com, which we do have some emails pending. And you can text us at 70236. We do have the caveat that we aren't allowing listeners to raise issues that haven't been brought up yet in this particular race. So, we had one caller who had hoped to raise an issue that hasn't been brought up, but we did not allow that, and so we put that caveat
to it. So you know, it's against state law to raise issues, and it's manifestly unfair when the candidates aren't here to defend themselves or to, you know, offer a rebuttal.
To respond in any way. Lance, you're on the mark. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, well, my firsthand experience with the minimum wage going up, I think I probably called about this before, was back in the early 60s, and I was like 14, and I had my first job of washing cars. And at that time, the wage was $1.10 an hour. It had been up from 85 cents not too long ago before that. And until 1969, it had gone up to $1.65. Now, the people, the demographic that you saw in 63 was a whole lot different than what you saw in 69. It wasn't a bunch of 14-year-olds that half of them wouldn't show up for work with attitudes and everything. It seemed to be older folks who were moonlighting from whatever or just wanted to pick up a little extra cash, because that was, a lot of money back then, that's for sure. So that's what happens, is those kids just don't get hired, at least from my experience, okay? And, okay, also here, when you talk about racists, now, the Democratic Party has the history of being a racist party right from the get-go. And yet now, they can just turn right around and say, oh, we're the greatest in the world when it comes to civil rights and things. And it really does make me angry. Because, like here, I've said this 100 times about Margaret Sanger. Some of her quotes are amazing. Like, colored people are like human weeds and need to be exterminated. And then about abortion is a great way to solve the Negro problem. Now, she did modify that. Later on, she even found out that abortion was such a horrid slaughter that she couldn't stomach it. So what she did was pushed for sterilization. So, it's got before the fact. But it was because it was, a really horrid act, abortion. And I think about, we give an award in that woman's name that Hillary Clinton got, and said how much she admired, Margaret Sanger. And you take a look back at, let's say, Harry Truman. He was really tremendous when it came to, he was a racist, a segregationist, to be sure. Like for Hillary, she had nothing for the Jews. I mean, she was really horrible.
Okay, well, you've covered that.
Just one quote here, okay? It was a political operative, Paul Frey, who was, pushing her on a question, whatever it was, and she said, quote, "You effing Jew B-word." Okay? So, but they just forget about that. Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We have emails. One says, if Mr. Rowe supports the Second Amendment because the people might need to rise up against a tyrannical government, can we safely assume that he means that he'd be okay with Antifa taking up arms against the Trump administration? That's from our friend E.B., and I would say that a terrorist organization taking over would not be a good thing.
All right. We have a caller on the line. David, thank you so much for calling in. You are on the mark.
Morning, Mark. Morning, Joe.
Morning.
So I wanted to speak to two different issues briefly. The first is there's been a lot of discussion in this campaign about full-time and part-time legislators, and I just wanted to remind voters that of the 50 states in the union, only 4 have the level of full-time legislator that Pennsylvania does. Another 4 have something nearly that, but that essentially leaves 80-some percent of all legislators in the United States have part-time or less in their legislators, which Jennifer brought up as potentially saving money if we were to shift away from such a bloated system. But to that issue, David Rowe had made statements to the effect that he wasn't able to attend the League of Women Voters debate because he's full-time campaigning, except that was the evening that he decided to hang out in a bar with friends and gloat about how he had it in the bag and things like that. And I don't think that's necessarily the type of representative that I want. I want somebody that's actually going to speak directly to me and be answerable to the questions. So when he speaks to representing family values and the values of this district, I feel it's hard to say that when he's not actually speaking to the voters of this district, not all of them, not even making the attempt to do so.
Well, let's be fair about that. You say that he spent the evening in a bar bragging about how he had it in the bag. You a personal witness to this?
I have multiple eyewitness accounts of him being in the bar. Yes.
Still hearsay. You don't know for yourself that he was there
or
what he did.
Sure. The other thing, though, is that I do have personal information regarding the fact that he speaks to trying to say that he's the one of the directors of the fire department thing. He's an alternate at best. He speaks to trying to say that he has all this experience on East Buffalo Township Supervisor Board. He passed one single budget in a year that there was a massive surplus going in and no need for a tax increase. He tries to inflate all of his record. And I understand, Jennifer has not held public office before, but she has a great variety of experiences related to more pressing direct issues like the opioid crisis and health care and insurance and things like that. But going back to the initial point was that if you're going to talk about representation and family values and representing this district, I think that you actually have to embody those things. And he speaks a lot about abortion, and he speaks a lot about Christian values, and he speaks a lot about gun rights and things like that. And I think that there is popularity to some of his opinions in the Valley, but it's not to the exclusion of everybody else. And we need to remember that Jennifer is also a lay minister and a Sunday school teacher and somebody that very strongly embodies those values. In the end, this is going to be a historic election no matter what, whether it's related to veterans' rights, hopefully, women's rights with Jen, LGBTQ issues, everything that could be brought up by electing one of these officials is going to be really important because it's one of the rarest kind of combinations of candidates that we could possibly have coming out of our Valley.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much for the observation. Well, in David Rose's defense, he felt as though the League of Women Voters event was, A, had an arbitrary deadline to respond, which he hadn't given a response in a satisfactory amount of time, which was like 3 weeks out, right. So it was a long period of time. And the second thing was, he's told us on the show he was out campaigning that night because he could do more good than to just go to...
What were there, 40 people there that night? I think that was what I saw.
I don't recall. Story. We did not go. We did not. We had it on our news calendar, but we went elsewhere that night. So, in any event, and he felt as though the individuals that would be there would already have their decision made, right. And were there to support a candidate, which is good. He could have potentially had supporters there as well.
We should mention that, you know, when we invited them here today, we tried to work with them to make sure it fit all their schedules, and we changed the date and the time more than once to accommodate everybody.
Right.
And they were all more than willing to show up here, you know, given the advance warning and notice we gave them and the fact that we tried to accommodate their schedules.
All right. One of our listeners sends us a text message, says David Rowe was in Middleburg campaigning until about 9:30. So apparently not
so
in the bar.
So not in the bar, okay.
Unless he's doing what the old-fashioned
way. Well, I mean, that's, you know, in a political campaign, everybody likes to... You know, I think it's very unfair to bring up a story. Well, several people told me he was in a bar drinking.
Well, yeah, honestly.
I mean, you know, come on.
This race has sufficient number of issues that, hey, I saw Jennifer here or there or all that stuff, not necessary. Let's take a quick break.
Okay. I think the big issue, though, is going to be voter turnout and whether or not people will vote in a special election in the middle of the summer.
Well, and we've run into, and again, this, I guess, hearsay, but we've run into some voters in the district who aren't aware there's an election. Who
really?
Say,
mm-hmm.
You know, they are voters. They have started to receive cards and things, and they actually thought they were for early birds
November.
On the fall. Right. So, I think that's a factor.
That's scary.
All right. Well, we'll take more commentary and more commercial on this. We have an open line, 1-800-795-9565. The telephone number, 1-800-795-9565. We have to add the caveat in that if you bring up a new issue, the candidates, or a new observation or a new accusation about the candidates, we can't allow it because they won't have time to respond on this show. This forum is considered an open forum, but it does end at 10 o'clock, and at which time there wouldn't be any more commentary from the individuals if they wish to respond. So because of that inherent unfairness, so we can't allow, and the law mandates that we can't allow new issues to pop up. But if you wish to talk about minimum wage, abortion, family values, people keep talking about that. Each of them mentioned gun rights in passing. It wasn't specifically a brought-up topic, but...
it was. I asked about the governor's proposals.
Oh, for the Friday proposal. Yes. All right. I'm right. You're right. Okay. So... 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the Mark, Sunbury Motor Company is our sponsor, selling Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln cars and trucks. I hope you saw them at Sunbury River Festival. They did have my new four-door Ranger down there with the six-foot bed. I'll tell you what, it's a gorgeous truck. I think it was marked down to $35,000 because it's nearing the end of the summer. And it was a beautiful truck. Yes, I did sit in it, and I didn't get a chance to drive it because there are thousands of people in the way. But I'll tell you what, a beautiful truck. So that's just one of the vehicles, the Ford. But they have Hyundais, Kias, and Lincolns. Very good prices. They're doing some discounting as some of the model years are going to change very directly here. So they're wheeling and dealing. SunburyMotors.com is where you can check out to see if they have your vehicle. And if they don't, you can build one. But I'll tell you what, they got hundreds of pre-owned vehicles, too, that have been through a 156,000-point check. It might be an exaggeration, a little puffery by me, but I'll tell you what, they do check them out, and they're good to go. If they're no good, they put them at auction, and they pop up at used car lots everywhere. The Quick Lane on North 4th Street in Sunbury will take good care of you, too. The Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915. All right, this will be the lightning round. Joe,
we have a couple of fast emails. Jordy says, you can help turnout by reminding independents that they can vote tomorrow. Many don't realize that. So if you're in the 85th District and you're an independent or Republican or Democrat, you can vote in tomorrow's election.
Hit delete.
The leadership, Susquehanna, or the League of Women Voters said it was 100, not 40. So we'll go with their number. The League of Women Voters was quite willing to change the details. Dave was campaigning, and then he was...
Scratch that. Hit delete.
Yeah, okay, hit delete. Let me hit delete.
There you
okay.
go.
Please remind that independent registered voters can vote this special election, and this isn't the whole idea of an organization based on one sex. It's very outdated, and the current caller, someone says that our current caller, David, who was on just a few minutes ago, was Dr. Jen's campaign manager. So.
All right, Dick, you get 1 minute on the radio. Please go right ahead.
Well, this isn't going to take a minute because I don't want, but I do know that one of the election polling, or maybe two of the polling places in East Buffalo Township have been moved to the Langone Center on Moore Avenue at Bucknell tomorrow. So if you vote in East Buffalo Township, you better make sure that you go to the right polling place.
All right.
Okay, that's a good point.
Noted. All right, thank you.
Bye.
All right,
bye.
Appreciate that. Chris, you're on the mark. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that... the League of Women Voters having probably to have to rent rooms and make sound people available, et cetera, is a sort of a different situation than a radio show where you have the same hour and a half available every day and the details you have to go through. And it makes sense to do it several weeks in advance because then everybody knows what's going on and who's showing up. And they aren't going to be saying, well, you did schedule, you gave me the time at the last minute or changed it at the last minute, and I've fit my schedule around it already, and now I can't change it. I think it's very sensible what they did, and I think that David sounds like an excuse that he never really wanted to show up at all because he passed the deadline without any protest about the deadline beforehand and everything.
All right.
Oh, he did protest. He did protest about the deadline beforehand, and he made it clear that they gave him a deadline that he felt was arbitrary, and he couldn't give them an answer by that deadline.
All right, we're allowing 1 minute each. Joe, please, the email.
Okay. Billy says, I already knew Jen's position on abortion, but I didn't know Claire Moyer's position. How disheartening to hear someone who claims to be pro-life say the following phrase, quote, many of these children deserve to live, unquote. All children deserve to live. Signed, Billy.
Exclamation point,
right,
says Billy.
Hit
delete,
point.
And that'll send us to the next email.
No, it won't. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right.
There you go.
Says, look, bring me in.
Oh, this is from Jordy.
This is from Jordy. Says,
about minimum wage. Oh,
right, he says,
again.
Bring me in, and we can discuss the research in detail. I will talk slower and more calmly. Joe is smart and fairly reasonable. It's just not as simple as it will kill jobs. After you let David Rowe pontificate and cite research incorrectly, you ought to let the public hear a fuller discussion. And
oh,
if it becomes up again, we sure will.
Yeah, absolutely. John is lined up, but not yet on hold, so we'll wait for that.
Okay,
there we go.
Jordy also says, you cut off Dwayne and let Lance say that the Democratic Party is racist and Margaret Sanger, come on. He was stating an opinion, and he wasn't coming down on creating any new allegations or discussions prior to the election, which is why Mr.
Didn't
Dwayne
really
was cut off.